Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a fun show, one that I think it's very hopeful, especially with everything that's been going on in the news. Today we're going to speak with Mr. J.D. Tuchile, and he is a former managing editor at Reason.com, and he's currently a contributing editor. And he's a writer, he is an adventurer, and I think a thinker as well. And I read one of his articles on Reason.com, and it was entitled Americans Have Rediscovered Self-Reliance. And I wanted to have him on because it really made me feel good that we are people, a people that is ever-changing. And no matter how many times they try to get us down, we're still going to come out on top because I think we're fearless. And I think people are naturally, they want to think the best and try to move forward no matter how bad the situation is. And this article was really pleasantly an eye-opener. So, Mr. Tuchile, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Well, I know that you've written a ton of things, and I wanted to know what sparked you. I mean, COVID is a situation that's affecting the entire world, but to find the good in it, to find people really making do, and I think in some instances thriving, what made you look at it from this point of view?
Well, there's different ways. Obviously, this is a crisis year. I mean, I think 2020 is the year many of us could have passed by quite happily, but we didn't have that choice. And it's been a crisis year. And there's different ways we can react to crises. And as a matter both of necessity and of choice, as we've been isolated from each other, as also we've seen businesses close, as we've lost jobs and had our resources constrained, we have turned to doing things that many of us had either forgotten how to do or never learned how to do. Some of these are basic skills. Some of these are a little more advanced. In many cases, they're things that our grandparents did on a daily basis. And it could start with something as simple as cooking. Now, obviously, a lot of us cooked our meals anyway. But for many people, we got used to grabbing something quick. And it might have been fast food. It might have been takeout from nice restaurants. Depends on where we are in life. But we got used to grabbing meals on the go. And as restaurants were shut down by lockdowns, as paychecks dried up, we found it necessary to rediscover our cooking skills, and people started cooking. Well, we also found that the supermarket aisles were emptying out. I mean, food wasn't there in the abundance that we're used to. So we started planting gardens. We started learning how to bake the bread that we couldn't find in the stores anymore. A lot of people have found that they turned to cooking and baking out of necessity, but also because it was a way to pass the time, to fill those hours they couldn't spend with friends and family anymore. They discovered an inner resilience, both in terms of their psychological self-care, but also in terms of being able to use these skills to put things on the table that they would have purchased in the past, things that maybe weren't available for purchase or that they didn't have the money to use to make those purchases anymore. So we've rediscovered these skills: cooking, baking, gardening, growing our vegetables again. There's been massive demand this year for seeds. Anybody who's been planting a garden knows that a lot of the seed suppliers emptied out this summer, and they've been kind of hitting their hovering over websites to click the button for when seeds got back in stock. It's been the same with even more esoteric skills. In my case, in my family, we used to can our food years ago. We dabbled in it, I should say. And we had some supplies. But this year, we realized that we weren't sure when things were going to be available. And sometimes they would appear suddenly. I found apples at 19 cents a pound. Well, what are you going to do with a vast quantity of apples at 19 cents a pound? What we ended up doing was making a huge supply of apple butter and then pulling out the canner, the pressure canner, and canning it away. Putting it away for use a year or 18 months from now. That's something my grandmother did all the time. She used to talk about it, and then as kids, we'd roll our eyes. Why would you can your food when you could just go to the market and buy it? Well, we couldn't buy it anymore. I didn't know when there were going to be apples in the market again, which is something that my grandmother was used to, but I really hadn't been up until this year. And I think a lot of us have turned to doing that. And because we're gardening, I found myself building raised beds and hitting the home supply stores. A lot of people were there, all lined up in masks to buy home repair goods and DIY goods that they might have kind of intended to do in the past, but didn't see any necessity. But they had time on their hands to do home repair, or in my case, had a need to build raised beds for the garden, keep the rabbits from eating up all the seedlings that we had sprouting. So started planting vegetables. I've got broccoli and garlic in now. I would have spinach if my dog hadn't eaten all the seedlings. But as that comes up, we'll cook that. And I've got I've got goods packed away in the closet now. Not only that apple butter, but lamb stew and chili put away for use at a later time, because we know from this year that sometimes meat has disappeared. And we're hoping that it doesn't disappear again. We know that our paychecks dry up and that we have to use what we have and husband it and make it last longer than we have in the past. Now, that means that we're sometimes acquiring these skills, not just because we have time on our hands, but out of necessity. And having that thrust on us isn't necessarily pleasant. I'm not going to say that having to do something, having to reacquire grandma's skill set is something that we appreciate necessarily. But I think we're discovering that it's not a bad idea to be able to do these things, even when, as the world returns to normal, as we hope it does, even when we would not choose necessarily to use these skills in the future. Knowing that we can do this is not a bad thing to know about ourselves. We know that we are more capable, perhaps, than we thought in the past. And hopefully we'll pass these skills on to our kids, because we don't know what kind of crises they're going to run into in the future.
I think that's generally an admirable thing that people are doing. And for me, I think I would ask you the same question. Once you have a skill and you have the ability to feed yourself and to, you know, people are sewing too, clothe themselves, does that make you less sensitive to this doom and gloom that we constantly get, you know, inundated with? I think fear factor drops when you know that you can handle yourself. What do you think?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. A big part of fear, I think, is that it's the unknown. What does this mean for me and my family now? How will my loved ones adapt now that the world has changed? And when we're aware that we have the ability, we have the resilience to acquire skills, to manage our reduced funds and resources, to respond to a situation and manage it and make it tolerable, I think it does reduce that fear, because it reduces the unknown. And I think it also makes us more resilient for the future. A different crisis may come along and it's going to be an unknown. But once you've been tested once you've been put through the fire, I think that you at least have the potential to have more faith in yourself, in your family, your friends, your ability to do things for yourself and for them, and their ability to help you. When you've had to go to the neighbor and say, can you give me a hand with this? And they say, sure, I'll be happy to. When you know that is there, that sense of community that maybe we had kind of let fall fallow in the past, it makes the world a less daunting place. So there are upsides to this, even though I'm not going to try to pretend that this crisis is a good thing, that we're happy about the pandemic. No. What we are happy about is that we're discovering that we are more resilient, more flexible, stronger people than maybe we gave ourselves credit for in the past.
I think that's the perfect way to look at it. It's self-reliance. It's not depending on somebody to do for you. I mean, whoever has this ability has the power. I don't want to cede power to anybody but God, and certainly not people who may not have my best interests, in my opinion, at heart. It's about control right now. So if you can control the major things, your where you live, you know, your shelter, your food, things that are necessities of life, I think that gives you a lot more choices. You're not beholden to anybody. You don't have to do something that may not be something that you really want to do. I know we have to take a break, so let's take our first break and come right back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. J.D. Trichile. And before the break, we were talking about self-reliance. And, you know, I'm with you. There's nothing good about COVID. But if there's some silver lining that you can get something that benefits you and your family, I think that's one way to look at it. I think that would also give people a lot more hope. There's so much hopelessness and despair, and people are emotionally spent. But being able to take your power back, no matter how small that is, if it's making your own, you know, wine or beer, or being able to sew your own mask, that is, every little bit counts, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely does. And I think that having lived through such good times, we maybe assumed that we were more fragile than we really are. And we may have made ourselves more fragile than we needed to be. and being tested is now proving to us our resilience, that we are more durable, that we are our grandparents' grandkids. The things that they were able to do, if pressed, we can rise to that occasion. We can acquire those skills, and we can go through tough times the way they did on a much more regular basis, I'll have to say, in the not too terribly distant past. Grandparents went through the Depression. They went through the Spanish flu. They went through periods when they didn't have, when having electricity was a new thing in many cases. So knowing that we are not some kind of a delicate, attenuated extension of our family lineage, that we really have it in us, that toughness that our ancestors have, means that we can appreciate the niceties. We can appreciate the prosperity of the modern age, but we don't have to be dependent on it. We don't have to hope that there's some net there that's going to catch us. If all the things we've become accustomed to go away, we really can rise to the occasion, rise to the challenge, and take it upon ourselves to do more for ourselves, to help our friends, to help our family and neighbors, and to know that in many cases, they'll be there to help us too, as the situation may demand. So it's good to be able, it's good. I won't say it's good to be tested, because nobody wanted this to happen. That's going too far. But I will say that there's a value in being tested, and it proves to us that we're more perhaps than we thought we were.
Well, I think you've made a couple of mentions about community and about being able to reach out to your neighbor and you know, be one, if for lack of a better way to put it. I just went out with a friend last night, and she happens to be a senior, and she was called, and her neighbor made a dinner plate for her for Sunday. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I'm seeing, which is really, it's just humanity stepping up to the plate with empathy. And we see so much negativity on TV that we almost forget that the majority of the people in our country are actually doing things like this, shopping for their senior citizen neighbors, bringing them food, you know, helping have school for kids, you know, like there's one parent who's basically acting like the school. I guess they rotate. These are all things that are bringing us as a country together. And I don't think we get enough airtime on this.
Oh, I think you're right. In recent years, we found more reasons than we ever thought possible to feud with one another, to be at odds with one another. And I'm not going to pretend that's going to go away. That's a separate discussion. And I think that that's something that's going to plague us for a while. But there's a lot more to life than the reasons we have found to fight in recent years. There is the fact that we have commonalities. There's the fact that we have complementary skill sets. I have elk steaks sitting in my chest freezer right now, because friends of the family went hunting, and my wife covered for them at her medical practice. And they came back and gave us some elk steaks to thank her for having covered, you know, for her colleague. We've also shared some of the food we've canned. We've helped people who have seen schools closed. We've homeschooled our son in the past, and so we were able to offer them materials and resources and advice to get them jump-started into something that they might not have chosen to do, but suddenly had thrust upon them, and were a little worried about how they're going to take on the challenge. And we wanted to make it easier for them to do it, so there wasn't a vast learning curve. We could share our skill set with them on that. So there's a lot to community, and some of it has fallen away in the past, but that ability for people to interact, I mean, we're still human beings. We still have that social need. And I think that most of us are still decent human beings too. And we're able to step up and help one another and to share our knowledge and our resources, and also to be helped when that need comes along too.
I think that's admirable. And I'm hoping that, you know, that gets multiplied throughout the country, because that would break the stalemate that we all are hyphenated all of a sudden. And because we're hyphenated, somebody has more than we have, and then we need to take it back from them. That whole tribal mentality is not, it's not healthy, and it doesn't work. So, you know, it does make people think of the commonality when we're all under the same duress. Then you kind of figure out with like-minded folks how to get around it, how to thrive within it. And you're just describing a couple of them. But another thing that really struck me too by your article, and I really didn't realize this, that there's a lot more saving going on, isn't there? We used to be a lot more credit driven, buy things when you don't need them and it'll work its way out. Seems like people are taking the opposite tack now.
Oh, absolutely. We all of us grew accustomed to good times, and our personal savings rate dropped down to very low levels, you know, 3%, 4%, 5%. This year, when I wrote that article, the savings rate, personal savings rate, had risen to 13.1%, which was the highest it had been since 1981. It actually jumped over the summer, 1 point in July, to 33%. That means that one out of every $3 people were earning, they were putting away for rainy days. And well, this whole year is a rainy day, isn't it? But they were putting away for future hard times. As of the latest figures, October, the savings rate was at 13.6%. So it dropped from its peak, but it's higher even than when I wrote that article. Savings is a good thing. And I think this year is reminding us that living from credit card payment to credit card payment is dangerous. It's not something you want to be doing on the assumption that the paychecks will always flow, that the stock market will always go up, and that the money will always be there to cover those debt payments. It's better off to get out of debt, put money away for the future, and be prepared for when a crisis hits, because inevitably the good times do come to a halt, hopefully only briefly, but they do come to a halt, and some bad times will be here and they'll test us.
Do you think this is an opportunity for the individual to have our, well, I say Americans as individuals, to have our own economy? We've spent a lot of money on big box stores and corporate driven everything, whether it's healthcare, whether it's shopping. Maybe, you know, this is a chance to take that back to Main Street and even smaller entities.
Well, it absolutely can be. I mean, a lot of local economies have been promoting small businesses and encouraging people not to rely upon the big boxes, the Amazons, the Google, the Googles and all the online businesses. Unfortunately, the rules in a lot of cases have socked small businesses the hardest. We've seen a lot of small businesses in our area go under. My son's Taekwondo Dojang, my son earned his black belt last year. His Dojang went out of business early in the lockdown. They just couldn't afford to keep the doors closed indefinitely, hoping that at some point, martial arts studios would be allowed to reopen. So they're not going to reopen. A lot of other businesses, we've seen restaurants go out of business. That's an extremely difficult industry at the best of times. Mm-hmm. Low margins, and they depend upon a very perishable goods. So small businesses are really being socked very hard by the pandemic, not just because people are sheltering and trying to avoid infection, but because lockdown rules have hit them the hardest, whereas big boxes can more easily sell through the internet. Now, there are ways around that. I mean, there's actually a new website here around us that's promoting local businesses. You've got your Etsy's and eBay's, which have a lot of businesses built into them, small ones built into them. And so some small businesses are thriving. But disproportionately, they're being hit hard by the current situation. And so people who want their local businesses to survive are going to have to make that extra effort to search them out and not just rely upon the easy way of having boxes delivered to their front doors.
Well, agreed. But it's something that would give us a lot more flexibility in case. I mean, I'm looking at some of this, the profits of these big box stores, and it's kind of obscene. You know, they're up 70% and 50%, and you know they've already put us in duress in terms of small businesses. But this seemed to be a windfall for them, and every time we have another lockdown, they don't seem to be affected by it, which is kind of interesting. I don't know if it's by design or whatever's happening, but there's no backdrop, no backstop for small individual companies unless we help each other.
Well, that's true. Let's be clear here. Jeff Bezos, Amazon CEO, didn't plan the pandemic. He just had a business model that rose to the occasion. He was in a very good position to be able to ship goods to people's homes. And not all large businesses are thriving. If you take a look at the airlines, if you take a look at the hotel industry, resorts, cruise industry, they're suffering. A lot of those aren't going to survive at all. But certain large companies were very well positioned to keep supplying goods to people who had a hard time finding them otherwise. Amazon has done extremely well, online bookstores, Walmart. I mean, some of these big boxes just have a business model that responds extremely well to crises. And that's or the reality of the situation. And to be honest, I'm glad they're there. I mean, we would have been hard pressed to go through this without some of that, I think, being present. But I do wish that the small businesses were not so hard hit by this. I wish that the lockdown rules weren't so arbitrary and discriminatory towards small businesses and would leave them less damaged than they're going to be, than they're being right now. So I tip my hat to some of those big companies that were well positioned to survive this and even thrive through this crisis. But I also really do worry about the small companies, my favorite restaurants, the little producers, the craft businesses, the little storefronts and the strip malls that we may make fun of sometimes, but those are people's livelihoods. I worry about those businesses because a lot of them are suffering and a great many of them are not going to survive this at all.
Well, isn't the majority of our country, the economic backbone, isn't it really small business more than the big box stores?
In terms of the number of businesses, certainly. As a percentage of employment, it's shifted differently because some of the big companies employ so many people. But small businesses offer, first of all, there's a lot of them. They offer a means of making a livelihood without having to work for somebody else. They allow people to fulfill their dreams, to create a very specific business. That restaurant they've always wanted, that martial arts studio, like the place my kid went, that was so great for him. The quirky bars and the quirky antique shops and those places that very often are very marginal, but that really do represent somebody's dreams. And they put food on somebody's table, pay their mortgages, pay their rent, keep people going. And it's hard to do that. I mean, small business people tend to work very hard. They also create jobs for others who come in and make their living in working in these businesses. It's a hard thing to do. There isn't a lot of slack, a lot of leeway for small businesses. And I think rules makers, our political masters don't necessarily appreciate that when they say, we'll do a lockdown, we'll shut things down, we'll put the country on pause for 2 weeks. Well, your average small business doesn't have much more than 2 weeks, if they even have that in the bank. And if you tell them they're going to have to stay on pause for a while, it's very likely they won't be coming back at all.
Good point. Let's take our second break and pick it right back up. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. J.D. Turchile, and he is the contributing editor at Reason.com. He's also an author of a novel, High Desert Barbecue, which people need to check out. And he can be followed on Twitter at JD_Turchile, TUCCILLE. And before the break, I think you were doing a wonderful job of laying out the individual side, the people. And you've written a recent article that I found really very timely, frankly, because it dovetails with this. And you mentioned overlords before the break, but we're talking about the people who make these rules and regulations and pronouncements that never seem to quite affect them. And your article was about many of our governors and people in power who do as I say, not as I do. And I'm fortunately not in a state that's going on in, but I can only imagine what it feels like for a person living in one of these lockdown states where you're told you need to stay home, but the governor's gallivanting, going to different states, going out to dinner. I mean, what are we to make of this as Americans?
Well, it's arrogance, of course. I mean, people who rise up through politics, who get in a position of using government power to make rules for other people, really do generally consider themselves, unfortunately, to be a separate class. They consider themselves to be above it all, and they almost always exclude themselves. I mean, I remember years ago when Mike Bloomberg was mayor of New York City, and he was in charge of a crackdown on public drinking, and then he was seen drinking a bottle of wine in the park. He says, well, people like us don't make trouble. It's those folks drinking, the tall boys on the street corners. Well, I mean, that's the attitude we get. It's so common. And we've been seeing that, unfortunately, just proliferating throughout the pandemic and through the various lockdown iterations in the United States, but also around the world. One of the examples I cited, and it just kind of sets the tone for all this, was that early on, Nigel Ferguson, who's a medical advisor to the British government and was sort of the author of the lockdown there, was caught having his married girlfriend stay over at his apartment in defiance of lockdown rules, which forbid households to visit one another. He ended up stepping down, and people were just marveling. This guy who had been pushing lockdowns, who pushed for penalties on people who defied the lockdowns, himself violated his own rules. Unfortunately, he wasn't the only one. I mean, we've seen governors like Pritzker of Illinois. We've seen the mayor of Denver. We've seen all sorts of political types. Gavin Newsom recently, with his very expensive dinner at the French Laundry in California, exempting themselves from rules that they would impose on others. And these rules, of course, are backed by fines and even potential jail time, mandates from the government that they don't expect to be applied to them. It is maddening. It's an arrogance that we kind of all knew existed. We knew that the political class didn't live by the same rules as the rest of us. But they changed the rules on us this year. They made them more draconian, more intrusive, more damaging, putting people out of work, putting businesses, into bankruptcy. And at the same time, they go out and enjoy their meals. They fly off on trips that they were forbidden to take. They go out for gatherings that we're banned from having. They have visits that we're not supposed to engage in ourselves. And they do this because they think that they shouldn't have to abide by the rules. They are, in fact, better than us by their own reckoning, of course. So it's this year has given us a crash course in what the political class thinks of themselves as opposed to what they think of the rest of us. And I think that it gets back to that self-reliance we discussed earlier, which is, why would you want to rely on these people? Because you know they don't think highly of us. Why would you want to put your fate in their hands? Better by far to do as much for yourself, your friends, your family, your neighbors as you can to help one another, because we're in this boat together. And our political masters who are making these rules certainly don't see them, see themselves as being in the same boat as the rest of us.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm all for self-reliance, and I think it's very powerful. And when we stop looking to them to be our answer, and we, you know, these influencers, another layer that seems to go on, it seems to dovetail with these powers that be telling us we should like listening to them and do our duty, but it doesn't seem to apply to them. How do we, aside from the self-reliance, what do you think we need to do to get them out of their comfort zone? Because they're very comfortable. It's like the law, they're above the law, and it does seem that way since it doesn't apply to them ever. How do we change that?
Well, to a large extent, I mean, we know they're not obeying the rules. To a large extent, we have to stop obeying those same rules when they don't make sense. I don't mean that pretend that the pandemic isn't going on. I think it's just common courtesy to wear a mask when you go to the grocery store. I think it's common courtesy to engage in some social distancing so that if you're carrying a virus and you don't know it, you don't accidentally pass it on to people people elsewhere. But if your business relies upon being open, if it's going to go bankrupt, open your business and give people the option of going to it. Do your business with local retail outfits that need it in order to stay open so that they're there not just now, but a year from now and 2 years and 5 years from now. We have to stop kowtowing to people who don't hold us in high regard and who don't have any intention of abiding by the rules that they impose on us. We're perfectly capable of doing that, I think, without taking it to the extreme of pretending that we're not in a situation with a contagious virus. I think we can wear the masks. I think we can social distance. But I also think we can open our businesses and visit our families and friends and have sensible gatherings without being bound by ridiculous and intrusive rules that change from day to day, that would bankrupt us, put us out of work, and destroy the society that we rely upon.
Or destroy us emotionally.
Absolutely.
Like wearing a mask in your house, ridiculous, by yourself or in your car on the highway. I mean, these are just arbitrary. It's almost like they're trying to see how far they can push us.
Oh, absolutely. I think a lot of this stuff becomes totemic. I'm going to wear a mask everywhere. The mask in the car thing, I think, is hilarious. And I see it fairly frequently. It's who do you think you're protecting and who do you think you're protecting yourself from if you're in your car with the windows rolled down or with the air conditioning on? I mean, that's just at a point where it's a purely symbolism. So be sensible, be respectful, but also live your life.
You have to. I mean, this is, we just went through half of the show talking about how important it is for human interaction and community. It's what gives a sense of self and purpose. Wearing a mask by yourself in a dark home just doesn't make sense to me. And I want, it's like pulling a football to me, because what was 2 weeks of, you know, distance to control the spread has become this. And there's no, I'm looking at it from a scientific point of view. The numbers don't bear out what they're trying to tell us. If this is the worst, you know, virus in the world, why do you have to take a test that has to be amplified 40 times to tell you if you're positive? You know, it's just, we don't seem to be moving past this point where we've done everything they've asked, and yet it's never enough. Now they're starting to talk about shutting down Christmas, and I assume it's going to go into the new year, but there's no end point to this. And there's no, I don't see how it's going to work unless this is where they want us to stay.
Well, and there doesn't seem to be an end point. And the rules get arbitrary and intrusive and also unthinking. I mean, we have the new administration coming in and talking about trying to strong arm states and localities into a national mask mandate, into national lockdowns, which overlooks entirely the fact that the country does not have a unified circumstance. It doesn't have unified situations for individuals, for localities. I mean, why would you have a national mask mandate that would apply to, say, rural areas the same way it does to crowded urban areas? Why would it apply to young, healthy people the same way it applies to those who are older or have pre-existing health risks? None of this makes sense. And these centralized top-down mandates don't take into account the varied circumstances of a diverse and vast society that has different needs, different values, different preferences, and different situations. And that really should not be subject to unified top-down rules.
Well, you have that's an excellent point. I totally agree with it. And then there's the other side of the science where there are therapeutics. So it's not like there's nothing that can help people and lower the amount of time that they're ill or cure them in some instances. It's like we have an answer. It's like it's not being used. And therefore, you take the most draconian, the most intrusive and invasive approach that's actually not effective if you think about it. If we did all this for April, May, June, and we're still doing it, why do more of it? It's obviously not working, right?
Well, I think the real test is going to come as these new vaccines come in. I'm looking forward to it because, honestly, if the political class is sincere, the availability of vaccines should be the game changer, right? Once we have that, once we're able to take these, we should be able to get back to some semblance of normal life. And if they don't lift the restrictions, if they don't recognize that the vaccines they've been talking about and that were rushed, and I mean, and I really give the pharmaceutical companies a lot of credit for this, but that they really dug into their basket of scientific tricks and developed some very promising vaccines. If the political class doesn't recognize that this is a game changer, that is clear that they're more invested in the restrictions than they are in actually alleviating the health crisis.
I think you're absolutely right. And then the question becomes, what do we do if that occurs? Because that's not going to be a joke. And I don't want to get your answer because it's probably going to be a very detailed one, which I hope. And I don't want to break you off to interrupt with a commercial. So let's take our last break and then come back and answer that question. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. J.D. Turchile. And before the break, we left with, a question that is a little, how can I put it? It makes you think. So let's play devil's advocate for a second. The vaccine comes out. They say it works. People are lining up to take it, but they don't, get rid of these restrictions. What are we to think of that?
Well, if that happens, if we have the vaccine go into wide circulation, and if the restrictions are not then dispensed with, if the lockdowns don't go away, if the mask mandates don't go away, it's a clear indication that the rules makers, the political class, that they're much more invested in the control that they've accumulated, the power they've accumulated over the past 9-10 months, mm-hmm. than they are in actually addressing the threat of the COVID virus. I'll say COVID is a threat. I had it, by the way. I got pretty sick. I would not want to do it again. I certainly don't recommend it. Let's put it that way. But it's something that we can get past. It's something that can be addressed. Modern science really can deal with this. And if the vaccine, which is coming in, which look very promising, the Pfizer and Moderna ones, and then the others that are behind that, we're supposed to start seeing distribution in December. We should see wide distribution starting in the spring of 2021. If that isn't reason enough to get rid of the extraordinary restrictions that we've seen on business, on education, on social life, on travel, then I don't know what would satisfy the demands of the political class. And at that point, it will be clear to us that they're not just looking to the viral risk. They're looking to exercising power, and we would have to respond accordingly.
Well, I have a corollary to that. Let's say the vaccine comes out, et cetera. Do you think, I mean, this is hypothetical, will they allow people to voluntarily go and get it? Or is this going to be you have to take it to get a job or get on a plane or be mobile? And that to me is really alarming if that becomes something that inhibits your ability to move around and to live your life. I'm not for that.
Oh, I agree with you. I don't want to see this particular health crisis. I don't want to see the pandemic become an excuse for further intrusions into our lives. Unfortunately, I think we're going to be seeing, let's call it legal detritus, cultural detritus, left in the wake of this pandemic. I do think we're going to see restrictions on travel, for instance. It's probably going to be increasingly harder to cross national borders without demonstrating you've had one of these vaccines at the very least. And I would expect that temperature checks and symptom checks at airports will probably be common, along with all the TSA theater we see for security when we pass through airports these days, which was imposed in the wake of 9/11. I mean, this in some ways is sort of the a health 9/11. That's going to leave changes in the way we travel. We're probably going to see mandates for the vaccine to be certainly to attend public schools, and I would think many private schools also. Some employers may require it. How greatly this affects us, how far this goes, I don't know yet. I don't think anybody does. But I would expect the greatest impact to be on travel, and especially on international travel. And I think that is going to be have long-term impacts that are going to be with us for a good many years to come.
Man, I certainly hope not. I hope your pronouncement of that is not doesn't come to pass. I mean, I can see it if it's there's no cure or there's no treatment, but I can't see it from a scientific standpoint to mandate something that we don't know if it works. They say it's 95%, but there's also a percentage that are going to have a really bad outcome. And if you multiply that by 350 million people, that's a lot of people who may never recover from the vaccine for something that can be treated with something orally, or even the antibody that's created. So there's, if it were the only game in town, maybe, but it's not. So I just think we should have choice. I'm always for choice. And people should not have that taken away from them for something that may or may not work. It's not, you know.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, first of all, this virus, and I mentioned I had it, it was unpleasant. It's also not the Spanish flu. I mean, it's not that severe. There are therapeutics for it, and it's early days. We forget, but we're less than it. I think the first case was reported in late October, November of 2019. We're 1 year into this, and in terms of developing medical treatments, vaccines, and such for any new ailment, this is really early days, even though we're all extremely sick of this whole situation. But I don't want to see this become a new excuses for intrusions to our lives, for mandates and requirements. There may be some trade-offs. I mean, if certain employers want to say, well, you know, we're going to hire you, but only if you do X, well, that's not a change from stuff we've suffered in the past in other contexts. So then you decide, maybe I won't work for this employer, or maybe I will because it's not that important to me. Maybe schools will require this vaccine, but they were requiring other vaccines too. And we've also seen that school choice has become really been supercharged this year. So mm-hmm. I think that the public school monopoly has been challenged, and it's going to have less of an ability to impose monolithic mandates on families anyway. I'm not a vaccine doubter, but I also think people should have choices whether they're going to take a vaccine, especially new vaccines. And you're right. I mean, there are undoubtedly going to be unknown side effects, certain people who react poorly to anything, because that's always the case in all situations. So I don't want to see government given more power in this. I don't want to see greater restrictions and limitations on people's lives with this pandemic used as an excuse, because that's unfortunate, it's unnecessary, and it overlooks the fact that freedom is its own justification, and choice is good in and of itself. It's not something that needs to be justified.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. So when you take that, what we just spoke about, and speak about the self-reliance aspect, you know, I can see a bigger picture where there's kind of a duality to society. Those who decide that they're going to be self-reliant, they're not going to enter this system where their choice potentially is taken away, and they are part of a communitarian situation where one size fits all, and they live their lives the way they see fit. I mean, that's possible, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, I think a lot. I think this shakeup we've seen this year, as unpleasant as it's been, has reminded people that good times are somewhat artificial. They don't last forever. I mean, honestly, historically, the normal situation of human beings has been poverty and misery. The last century has been absolutely wonderful. We forget how wonderful it's been in terms of alleviating hunger, alleviating poverty. And to a large extent, it's been because of freedom. Actually, not just a large extent, almost exclusively. It's because freedom has allowed us to develop our potential, to develop our agriculture, our medical science, free markets, everything that's given us the prosperity to develop new ways of living that are so much better than the ways in the past. But relative to human history, the prosperity, the good times are artificial. And you don't want to live such an attenuated, such a fragile life that if that good time comes to an end, you are unable to respond, you don't have the resilience, and you find yourself dependent on somebody else's charity, especially if it's the charity of a Gavin Newsom or a Nigel Ferguson or a Governor Pritzker, people who demonstrated that they consider themselves above us and that they don't have our best interests in mind. Hopefully we've gained a little more self-reliance this year and a little more awareness, not just of the fragility of the human condition, but also of our ability to step up and do things that we maybe didn't have faith in our ability to do in the past.
Well, I like to see the good in everything. And this window that we have is an opportunity and a wake-up call where we got jolted as a people. And you're talking about those of us, and I think a growing number of us, who have figured out how we can be self-sufficient, take our power back, et cetera. But this is also our ability now to say, we're not going to tolerate a totalitarian society. We're not voting for you. We're not going to put you back in. This is a window, I think, that we need to take advantage of and not lay back and see what happens.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I wish that voting, say, had more impact than it does. We have we're presented with sort of a bipolar choice in our society. And if like me, you find those choices to be less than to your taste, you're kind of stuck. But there's other things we can do. And among those things I mentioned before is don't feel yourself be bound by arbitrary and intrusive rules. Do things that are sensible, even if they're forbidden. You know, gather with your friends, gather with your family, open your business. Give your business to others who need it, who may be open in defiance of the rules. Don't let yourself be constrained by those who don't have your best interests in mind and who really don't necessarily know what they're doing whatsoever. There's no particular reason to rely on them, to ask them for permission, when we're capable of exercising good judgment, of respect for our neighbors and our friends and our family, and of doing the right thing without being told somebody else's conception of what the right thing is.
I couldn't have said it better. There's actually an example of, a bar owner in New York who has dubbed his establishment an autonomous zone, which I think is hilarious. So he's staying open in defiance of the lockdown in New York. And I wish more people would have that mentality. You know, you have to take a stand. And as long as it's something that you believe in, then you should fight for it. In the last couple of minutes we have, how can people reach you?
Oh, well, you can find me on the Reason.com website. I always have articles there published under my byline, JD2Chile. There's a bio there. There's a link to the material that I've written. I'm on Twitter, JD_2Chile. And please follow me. And whether you like me or don't like me, let me know, because I always appreciate the feedback.
I definitely will follow you. And your book, how can people get it?
It's available at Amazon and also at Barnes & Noble, and that's High Desert Barbecue. It's a humorous adventure novel set in the American Southwest. And if you like the outdoors and you like a good laugh, you might appreciate that.
Well, I think we all need a good laugh. I want to thank you so much for coming on. I learned a great deal, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Have a blessed day. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.